Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
A lot better when my fat fingers don't hit the wrong damn button. Good evening, everybody, and welcome into the Raw Reaction for May 13th, 2019. I am your host. My name is Harry Broaders. We are live here on the ChairShot Radio Network. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Yo.
And the line in the sand, Andrew Balazs.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of pieces of network news to touch on real quick here. First of all, this is the go-home for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, so we will be doing predictions at the end of the show. In addition, Tony has some news about next week's episode. Tony?
I mean, I don't want to call it news. I won't be here. I mean, I could be here. However, I would be coming off of a five-day bender from Vegas. I'm not sure how helpful I would be.
I feel like drunk Tony.
I'm almost intrigued. I'm almost intrigued to see what that would be like, because that could either be really, really good or really, really, I guess, interesting.
It can't be any worse than the booking on Raw over the last couple of months. If we've survived this, I think we can handle drunk Tony.
Yeah, well.
No, there's a difference between drunk and a five-day bender.
Yeah, man. It's going to be fucking... Monday will be day five. Thursday, Friday. Yeah, Monday would be day five. And if it was anything like last year's Monday when I went to EDC, I was drinking the leftover alcohol from the trip from an ice bucket with a very long straw.
And by that, do you mean you just put all of the leftover alcohol into the ice bucket and you just had the straw in the ice bucket?
Yes, that's exactly what I did.
Oh, that's a wonderful concoction. Did you name it?
It tastes like bananas. I remember it tasted
like believe that. I believe that would be called the Acero.
I like it tastes like bananas as a better name, because then you really don't know what the fuck you're getting. You just know what it tastes like.
Coming soon to the bar, huh, Tony?
No, that would be an expensive-ass drink. It had Cazadores tequila. It had vodka. It had Jaeger. It had Jack. I believe some coconut water and Powerade. There was a small little little 1 ounce or 2 ounce bottle of Bacardi 151. And I think that's it. But it was, the ice bucket was full. We put a little bag in there, 'cause I don't know where those buckets have been. And yeah, I'll send you the video.
That'll be fun.
So Andrew and I will be handling your post Money in the Bank show, in addition to getting you ready for Double or Nothing the following Saturday, which I will have the all in review typed up before the 13, 12, technically, days are up, Andrew. I'm on this.
We'll see. We'll see.
Then again, I promised homecoming before Rebellion, and, well, that didn't work out so well.
Indeed.
All right, so let's get to the go-home episode of Monday Night Raw then. We are live from the O2, well, live to tape, from the O2 Arena in London, England, because apparently they can't plan well enough to give us an actual live-to-live episode of Raw for the go-home. Thanks. Appreciate it. Anywho, we open up with Miz TV, Miz's guest, Roman Reigns, Miz's Interruption, Elias, and Bobby Lashley. Hey, at least they pulled Lashley away from Baron Corbin. This leads to Shane McMahon coming out to announce said Miz TV was over, and that after Roman and Miz got attacked by Lashley and Elias, it set up your opening contest, which was a tag match scheduled for one fall. Playa. Let's start with the opening segment here. A little bit more tolerable than it's been in recent weeks, but I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that it was almost about 5 to 10 minutes shorter than it's been in the last couple of weeks as well. Tony, what did you think of Miz TV to open the show with Roman and Miz?
It's just more of the same. And, let's just get rid of the brand extension. It just doesn't make any sense anymore. Also, the reality that Roman Reigns is this quasi standing up for us against the McMahons, but only sometimes. Shane made the match, which goes against everything that we've heard from them about the McMahons not doing it. I don't know. It's just a lot of sloppiness and kind of like lazy. It's more of a par for the course. You know, let's open up with a talking segment that'll lead into a tag match, because why do anything else?
Andrew?
Okay. Well, to be marginally less cynical than Tony, there's two things I took away from this. One, casual Roman Reigns is so much easier to tolerate. Him on the microphone, that was so good, and it's just, it came off so natural, and just, I really liked the way he just checked Miz and didn't even let Miz go through the snarky bullshit, and he's just like, yo, where the fuck is the guy that, you know, ran people off last week? Like, do we have tape of that? Can we go to the tape? Can we? And it's like, that was neat. And when it comes to the McMahon's not making matches thing, I like the continuity, at least from week to week, as in last week to this week, because, and you may see that as being, you know, the lack of continuity, Tony, but no, there's continuity, because Vince kind of just ignored Shane and Elias as being against the wild card thing, and it wasn't until Lars kind of intimidated him that he's like, oh, wait, it's four people, not three, and, you know, Shane's above board, he does his own thing, like, that doesn't count. So Shane being the one to be like, all right, now it's over. You get jumped and fuck you. Now there's a match. So haha, I'm Shane McMahon. I guess it's where they're going with the character, that he's, you know, entitled, power tripping, whatever the hell the story exactly is. It's not like it's new. It's something we've seen before, but at least there is a fragment of continuity within Shane's character to excuse some of the overarching continuity flaws that you were starting to point out, but there's at least some stuff that doesn't completely like lack logic.
Here's my question: is how the fuck did Bobby Lashley get involved in all of this here? I expected the tag team match on this episode of Raw, but I was expecting Elias and Shane against Roman and Miz just to get the bookend, the two singles matches for Sunday. I don't know what Tony's rearranging in his kitchen, but I'm sure it sounds interesting to the listeners at home.
Yeah, he's always muddling with something. Sheesh.
Was that, Tony? Riveting.
Oh, I said I didn't care.
Here I thought Tony was just planning his moves because he's playing really loud, clunky 4D chess or something like that. Like, you never know. He might just be on a different level than all of us.
I could totally see Tony playing four-dimensional chess, Big Bang Theory style. Totally buy it.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I would think Tony would add a clause, though, is that every time you lose a piece, you take a shot.
See, now there's an idea for a bar tournament: drunken chess or checkers.
Oh Christ.
Tony, there's money to be made there. Look into it. All right, anyway. Elias and Lashley taking on Roman and Miz. The match goes to a disqualification when Shane gets involved, because of course Shane gets involved. 11 minutes and 8 seconds, about 8 of which was shown with the commercial break, Andrew.
It was. True. And it wasn't a bad match either. Honestly, everything that was going on made sense. Miz took a bigger beating. They tried to, you know, solo him out because obviously he's easier to beat up than Reigns. And it all made complete sense. And again, turns to that whole Shane being the evil heel mastermind type character who's just doing as he pleases because he can, because he's a McMahon. So I was fine with it. It wasn't wonderful. It didn't blow me away, but it was a good match. I didn't mind it.
Tony, our opening tag team contest, your thoughts?
Yeah, it was cool. You know, the first half kind of seemed like a house show match, which isn't necessarily
a bad
thing.
You said as much in the report.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe that I got, which makes sense considering they're, you know, overseas. And I don't know if I'm, you know, totally bothered by it, because a lot of the times when you're at a house show, they kind of are a little bit more lax, which means the real them gets to come out a little more. But, you know, like the setup for the 8 kicks was a little too much. But other than that, I thought the match was fine. There was some good wrestling on tonight, which, you know, kind of helped the show a little bit.
Yeah, the in-ring content definitely stepped up from the last couple of weeks, and I think that that's going to be reflected in our scores a little bit later on. Let's talk about the next thing on the show here, which was the video package that they used to put together for AJ Styles and Seth Rollins this Sunday at Money in the Bank here. We can then also include Rollins and Styles' respective promos that they had on the evening with that Sarah chick, Sarah Schreiber, I think they said her name was. Either way. Yeah, either way. The video package I thought was nice, and I do appreciate them actually kind of giving a nod to the independent scene by showing the highlights of Seth and AJ from NWA No Limits in 2006. That was a little bit of a surprise, but it was an appreciated surprise. A, it shows that they're willing to acknowledge that there's wrestling outside of WWE. B, it shows that they're willing to capitalize on people facing outside of the company in order to make it mean something in the dynamic of the company itself. Because Seth tied it perfectly into his line when he finished his promo of, that night, I was still looking up to AJ Styles, but come Sunday at Money in the Bank, AJ Styles will be looking up to me when I keep my Universal Heavyweight Championship. Tony, what did you think of both the hype package and then the two respective promos?
You know, there's a part of me that wants the WWE to treat every match like it's a WrestleMania match, which gives us this super hyped and great feeling. But then there's also a part of me that's like, damn, I wish this was given more love and attention, because it feels like that video package is for a match that is, like, transcendent, and Money in the Bank just doesn't feel like that. So it's hard for me to judge it harshly, because like, I feel like that's a great video package with some great history to fall back on. And yet it feels kind of, you know, like this particular pay-per-view coming up doesn't feel important enough. And I don't know if that's their fault or my fault, because what are they supposed to do? Wait a whole year for WrestleMania to make this match? You know what I mean? It's just one of those things where it's kind of hard for me to complain. Yet I find their overall lack of build to be like, damn, I wish it was done better.
What about the two respective promos that they had, AJ's first and then Seth's?
I mean, whatever. The promos I could have done without. They've been saying the same thing for a while now, so it was neither here nor there. They're two of the better promos of the night, because some had some pretty bad moments.
Well, in fairness, Braun is garbage on a microphone in general. Andrew, your thoughts?
I like the video package. I could have done without, much like Tony, I could have done without the promos afterwards, because the video package sold the match and sold the feeling way more than both of them. Like, Seth lacks conviction when he speaks. He's really just the equivalent of like a stale script read. Like, all he does is he knows his words, he knows his lines. And he's just a dick, and it comes off in his character work when he's even trying not to be. He's just a disingenuous prick who comes off without conviction, and I can't fucking get behind anything he says. And an AJ Styles promo has kind of been the same since around 2011. So if you've seen one since that point, you've seen most of them. So it was neither here nor there. The video package definitely did more than any word they tried to say today, though.
Well, as I said, I actually liked Seth's promo because he kind of brought it all full circle. I do think that AJ's promo kind of dragged, but I don't think that there's any question that this is going to be a very entertaining match. My concern is how much of an overbooking do you think that we're going to get with this match, given the fact that they're going to be turning around basically almost directly into Santa Time on June 7th. I think that was the announced date for the next Saudi Arabia show. We'll talk more about our expectations for the match when we do our predictions a little bit later on. One thing I did forget to mention about the opening segment, the opening tag match, that is that after the match, Shane joined in with Lashley and Elias for a 3-on-2 beatdown, but eventually Roman and Miz stood tall because it was a house show match, as Tony said, and babyface is staying tall at the house show. Speaking of Braun Strowman, do you guys want to bundle this all together into one gigantic package?
There's a bundle to you.
Package.
I mean, it could have been worse. We could have turned it into a cube. Charlie, you're adorable, but shut up. Anyway. So Charlie talks to Braun Strowman, and a stagehand comes and tells Braun that Shane McMahon wants to see Braun. We come back from the commercial break, and Sammy and Shane are talking. Too many people. Sammy and Shane are talking when Braun comes in. Sammy challenges Braun to a match tonight for his spot in the Money in the Bank ladder match. He then says that he wants false count anywhere, and the writing is on the wall. Eventually, that does give us our False Count Anywhere match as the main event of this episode of Raw. Sami Zayn and Braun Strowman go, hold on, let me find the exact time here so don't screw that up, 14 minutes and 36 seconds. An assist from Drew McIntyre and Baron Corbin, specifically McIntyre with a Claymore kick following a double suplex onto a ladder. See Sami Zayn get pulled into the cover and take Braun Strowman's Money in the Bank spot with the assist, as mentioned, of McIntyre and Baron Corbin. Two-part question, Tony. One, how much do you prefer Sami than Strowman in this Money in the Bank ladder match? Two, does this make you worried about the potential for Braun's interference at said match on Sunday?
Yeah, Sammy over Braun any day for sure. And I guess how much if I had to measure it? A lot? I don't know. With regards to Braun interfering, I mean, I guess it's pretty, you know, if it happens, it wouldn't be a surprise. Although I don't care either way. Those are your answers.
Andrew, same two questions. Preference of Sammy over Strowman in the ladder match, given your discontempt, given your contempt for Strowman on this show, I don't think that's exactly a surprise to anybody. But on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely do you think it is that Strowman interferes in the Money in the Bank ladder match on Sunday?
I mean, 15? Like, Strowman now has an issue with Corbin and Matt McIntyre, so neither one of them really need the briefcase. Neither one of them is anybody that really is hard picking or really wants to accept. Everybody loves McIntyre, but as we already assessed a couple weeks ago, he doesn't need the briefcase. He's still a top guy with or without. It doesn't matter. And yeah, nobody wanted Braun in that match because it was going to be a lot like this match where if he was in that, they would have all ganged up on him and he still would have done the whole super monster thing and then beat the shit out of everybody. And, you know, maybe Ricochet would have backflipped off of his shoulders or something like that and tried to take him out at the knees. I don't fucking know. But it would have been garbage, just like last year's. So let's not relive that. So, yeah. Sammy in? Good. Braun's going to interfere? Sure.
Back to the part of the show that we were on. Mojo Rawley is back on Monday Night Raw. and there may be literal crickets in the crowd, because there was absolutely nothing in terms of a crowd reaction throughout the entirety of this match. He takes on Apollo Crews. The match itself goes about 3 minutes. Man, that's longer than it actually has. I have an official listing of 1:13, so I guess I was counting entrances. Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Anyway, Mojo with an Alabama slam to Apollo to pick up the win after Apollo injures his knee, air quotes, on an audio podcast. And Mojo takes advantage with a series of chop blocks, followed by the running right hand in the corner before the Alabama slam. Andrew, it's take three with Mojo. Do you see this being any different than the first two?
What? How? Why do we care? Like, we haven't seen him in one of his stupid fucking promos in, what, 2 weeks? 3 weeks, maybe? And it was 2 weeks ago or whatever that he put the stupid glass break paint on his face, but he's been saying nothing. He hasn't really shown much. This was the first time he's wrestled in fucking forever. So, what? Like, the crowd didn't care? What can we really extrapolate from this aside from they're trying? They've tried before. Who the fuck knows? Maybe they'll put more effort in. I don't. It is what it is.
A, points for using extrapolate. B, Tony.
Yeah, it did turn me on. I don't know, man. You know, I've sung the praises of Mojo before, only to be disappointed. I don't know. You could create a video game that has a better make a superstar story than Mojo, anything Mojo Rawley has done. We don't get it. What are we supposed to understand from him? What is his character? That he is a broken man who he's a shattered reflection of his former self? I don't know. And why does his face paint look like a 3-year-old autistic kid did it? I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know why we would care that Apollo Crews lost, of all people. I'm glad that he got his full name back. I don't know, because it's like, I feel like they want to give Mojo some energy, but then he goes out and he, like, have you ever heard basically how, like, screaming does not equate to passion, or screaming does not mean you're doing well or you're emoting correctly? Like, Mojo, mm-hmm. What are you screaming for, bro? Why are you yelling? Chill out.
I think we can all admit, though, that whatever incarnation he's on now, it's better than his initial NXT run where his finisher was just sitting on a motherfucker.
Yeah, but you know the posts are coming from Hardcore Holly bitching about this dude Jack and his finish. In fairness, Holly's a bitter motherfucker.
I mean, he is. But, you know, Crash is the one we ever really had to worry about because he's well over 400 pounds.
Yeah, he was a big boy. Carried a scale around to prove it.
Exactly.
Rest in peace, Michael Lockwood. We go from Mojo and Apollo to Alexa Bliss. That's quite the awkward transition. Alexa's complaining about the airline losing her luggage. She has not had luck when it comes to her wardrobe within the last couple of weeks. Nikki Cross, apparently sane and on her medication, I'm guessing. Like, I could see that being the thing. Like, sometimes she's on her meds, sometimes she's not. Basically, it's Alicia Fox with talent. Sorry, Andrew.
Hey, it is what it is. Just get to your point, because I have a couple comments. Go, go, go.
And Nikki ends up talking to Alexa, and Alexa ends up convincing Nikki to take her place in the fatal four-way between the women's Money in the Bank ladder match participants later on in the show. Do we combine this with the match itself, or do we keep them separate? Tony, what do you think? Do you want to just combine them with the match?
Sure.
All right. The match is the aforementioned fatal four-way, and Nikki actually picks up the victory in the fatal four-way, pinning Natalya with a swinging neckbreaker using the middle rope. I believe Eric Cannon calls it total anarchy. Afterwards, Alexa Bliss, as Nikki's about to set up the ladder, Alexa Bliss tells Nikki to step aside and climbs the ladder herself to grab the briefcase, sitting on top of the ladder with the briefcase in her hand as we go to commercial. All right, Andrew, you said you had stuff to say about this, so I'll let you go first.
Oh, I did, because my whole point is, did Alexa really convince Nikki? Like, did she, though? Because Alexa tried to play snide and conniving, and, you know, you even saw her grin as she turned away and then came back like, oh, no, they can't find my stuff, and I've got nothing to do. And I'll go tell the McMahons that you stepped up, thank you. And then Nikki just grins, and then she goes into crazy mode. So what makes you think that let Nikki play, which is all she was saying when she first came up, this isn't just Nikki figuring out a way to let people make her play, because Alexa doesn't like to play, and Nikki likes to play. And that was the most beautiful aspect of this setup, is that you don't know who used who. And Alexa's trying to take credit for it, and Nikki sets up the ladder for her, and then when she starts to climb and Alexa's like, no, me, then Nikki plays along. She's like, okay, go. And it's like, you're just waiting to see who's actually in charge of this little dynamic. Like, I'm looking forward to if this becomes a thing, because I think Nikki is just going to beat the hell out of Alexa at some point, and it's going to be beautiful, because Alexa's not going to see it coming, because she thinks she's the puppet master. And it's just, I hope, because as we know, WWE isn't always good with nuance and isn't always good with a long-term storyline, but the way it was set up today was just so gorgeous to make Nikki look like more than just, you know, bitches be crazy embodied. Like, she actually has a brain, and she has a way to kind of finagle the situation to finally get on TV, especially when she's quote-unquote in her home country, town, whatever the fuck you, however you want to really turn that phrase.
I kind of see where you're coming from with regards to Nikki using Alexa just as much as Alexa used Nikki there, and it would be an interesting way to spin it, so they're obviously not going to have any interaction with each other starting next week.
Shut up.
I want to give real quick credit to Dana Brooke for her performance in this four-way as well, because I actually thought Dana was very impressive. And the cross-body block that she did off of the top of the ladder there.
I was thinking it. Thank you for saying it, Tony.
Hey, what can I say? I am nothing if not consistent with my love for Dana Brooke. Tony, what did you think of both the backstage segment and the four-way?
I hope that Andrew's right, because that means that they're giving her character. And, man, wouldn't that be great? It'd also be a nice feud. I think that those two can do really well together. The Fatal 4-Way was for three – let's see. I'm trying not to be mean. It was average, slightly below – it was everything they did was incredibly choreographed to the point where it was obvious and annoying. From Natty running over the back of Naomi to even the crossbody that you talked about. You know, it was very indie setup where they stand up and wait a very long time for someone to fall onto them. I was not impressed by Dana. I don't think I will be ever. I would love to be, but she just, you know, doesn't have it. And pointing out how much she deserves it doesn't help either. I didn't think the Fatal 4-Way was all that good. I know that it wasn't bad, but it's really unfortunate to see something like this, because I could see that they're trying, but it's like watching someone dance and count out loud while they're dancing, you know, just not there yet. And a Fatal 4-Way is a very dangerous match to have before a ladder match. But I mean, you know, it also wasn't the worst thing in the world.
In regards to the spot rest style of the match, I think that works, though, because you're going to have a very similar kind of match on Sunday inside of the Money in the Bank ladder match.
I don't care. I'm not watching the Money in the Bank ladder match. I'm watching a Fatal 4-Way.
And as far as my obsession with Dana...
Aw, Puddin'.
Yeah, I don't deny the fact that you are obsessed, and I support it, especially me. You know, but it doesn't make her a better wrestler. At least the women I'm obsessed with can actually fucking move.
Yeah, one
it
of them moved right out
Harry
of the company.
Wanted to be
bye,
the one
Sasha.
On the receiving end. Yeah, Harry just wanted to be the one on the receiving end of that crossbody. That's all.
America. Actually, I believe the message that I sent to you, Andrew, was when I grow up, I want to be that ladder.
You did say that, yes.
I want to be Alexa's ladder. She straddled that motherfucker like.
That is when I sent the message to Andrew.
You were just a big fan of that ladder because I think that was the same ladder they used that Dana Brooke climbed on top of. So.
Lucky ladder.
That ladder is just being named Harry tonight. That's all that one is.
Let's go to the double champs contract signing for both the Raw and the SmackDown women's title matches at Money in the Bank here, as Becky is in the ring with both Charlotte Flair and Lacey Evans. Yeah, I could have done without Becky pointing out the whole sister aspect of it, because now I can't unsee it. It's basically Charlotte and racial stereotype Charlotte. In the end, Lacey and Charlotte end up getting it starts with one thing. Anyway.
I don't know why.
Doesn't even matter
how hard you try.
In the end, again, because I can't help myself with that setup there, it ends up with Lacey Evans and Charlotte putting Becky through the contract signing table, because that never happens in the WWE, to stand tall with the Raw and SmackDown women's titles, respectively. Andrew, your thoughts on the contract signing segment?
I mean, where were you like 3 weeks ago when Becky was saying, oh, it's a Charlotte clone? And did you just really need them next to each other for it to finally sink
in,
Harry? Okay, fine. But that's been Becky's whole shtick. And that's probably the reason why I didn't enjoy this, is that Becky's shtick is like she said the same shit for 3 weeks. And none of it's interesting. None of it has evolved. Charlotte also is kind of on repeat. And Lacey, I like Lacey's character. I like Lacey in general. So I did enjoy the fact that, you know, they were booing the shit out of her. They don't like her over there, which is the point. She's a heel. She wants you to boo her. And it didn't really catch her up. Like, she stopped to acknowledge it, which is fine. And it just kind of gave the situation a little bit of time to breathe. But then Charlotte feeling like she had to fill gaps, which was completely unnecessary, and Becky saying fuck all, like, it was a hard segment to sit through. And I guess it was kind of interesting to see them work together to beat the shit out of Becky and then stand tall afterwards, because you don't normally see two people stand tall with two belts from the one person they just threw through a table. So that's slightly unique. But yeah, I could have done without all of this.
Tony?
Oh, man. Charlotte is so bad when she talks.
Thank you.
This was rough. It was super rough because it's cool. Becky, it makes sense for Becky's character to be like, I'll fight both of you. I don't give a fuck. Like, I'll beat both your asses. And then Lacey, who wants to cleanse the universe of all the nasties, also makes sense, right? So you're like, okay, cool, whatever, I get it. And then Charlotte talks, and literally, I'm like, wait, what? Where does it even come from? Why would she be jealous if she's beaten you numerous times? Why would she want to be you and bow down to the queen? Wait, you're not a queen? What are you talking about? It's like she took the wrong script out there and read it. And everyone else is talking about something else on a completely different page. And she's just, like, doing her super inflection, like, and you just don't get it, Becky. Get what? What are you talking about? Sign the contract and go away. Please, thanks. Damn!
Baron Corbin and Ricochet up next in singles action. Corbin picks up the win as a tilt-a-whirl is countered into the end of days at 9.5 minutes, about 6.5 of which was shown. I was Andrew and I were messaging back and forth throughout the course of the show here, and I was actually impressed by the finish. I like the finish here. I don't necessarily like Corbin over Ricochet, but, I mean, Ricochet is kind of the underdog going into the Money in the Bank ladder match, so I guess I can kind of accept it. Tony, what did you think of Corbin and Ricochet?
I thought that Corbin suffered from the same thing that the girls did, in that he set up a lot of the moves to the point where it was obvious. And that's unfortunate, because I did not think that the match was bad. You know, it was a Ricochet match, and it's if Corbin were a better, bigger guy, everything would have worked off a lot more smoother, worked out a lot smoother. But because he's not, it just, you know, it came off as it completely telegraphed and very obvious. So it wasn't as crisp as it could have been. With that being said, it was still a pretty good match, one of the better matches that Corbin has been in, and I mean, Corbin going over, I don't necessarily find it a bad thing. I don't like Corbin, but also it makes sense only because the Money in the Bank match is coming up. So Ricochet doesn't need to win, you know? It doesn't really, neither person needed to, but it doesn't matter, basically.
Andrew, Corbin, Ricochet.
I mean, the match was there. It was fine. It's not like it was offensive. And like you said already, we were texting back and forth. And I agreed with you in that Corbin does usually find kind of interesting ways to set up his moves. And that much I will give him. He's still a boring as fuck performer, though. And that hasn't changed, so that's painful. And I don't like him either, but we're not supposed to. So I guess he's doing his job in that respect. And also, if we frame it with knowledge from the rest of the show, since the show is done and we can do that, it helped because it did make him look like a bigger threat when he came in to attack Braun. And they could play him up a little more because he's had a little bit of success lately, beating Kurt Angle, at getting a couple wins under his belt, going into Money in the Bank, yada, yada, yada. And as we already kind of discussed, there's a good chance that Braun's going to come in and fuck over him and Drew. So it gives Ricochet more of the underdog aspect for this match. So if anything, it positioned Ricochet probably higher in the odds to win the Money in the Bank, even though I think it would be a little too soon since he has no character at the moment and he's only been on the main roster for, 2 months? But either way, he's positioned, I think, slightly better for the match in general.
Tony, I want to go back to something that you said when you discussed this match here. You said that the match was fine, but it would have been better if Corbin wasn't telegraphing where he needed to be because of the fact that he's not able to keep up with a guy the size of Ricochet. He's a below, I believe the way that you phrased it is that he's just not as good of, he's not as experienced or as good of a worker as a guy like Ricochet is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the match that happens a little bit later on in the show, set off by a meaningless backstage segment that I don't really feel the need to even discuss too much. Although, really, who throws a suitcase?
Rey Mysterio.
As Rey and Cesaro get into it backstage, once we see the highlights of Joe's confrontation with Dominic from last week's episode of Raw. That sets up Cesaro and Rey Mysterio a little bit later on in the show. We might as well streamline right into that from the conversation about the backstage segment here. And in my opinion, this was hands down the best thing on this show. About 10 minutes worth of work, 7 of which was shown there, and Rey and Cesaro were both on throughout the duration of this match. You mentioned that you dislike Corbin because you feel like he's in a spot that he doesn't deserve. I almost feel like you could swap Cesaro for Corbin here, and people would be much more invested in Cesaro in this role than they would be in Corbin. Tony, what are your thoughts here? First on the match, and then as far as their relative places on the respective mid-card for the WWE Raw roster.
I have been wanting a Cesaro run for years. I think that he is one of the best guys on the roster, period. Promo-wise, he sucks, because even that backstage segment was hard to go through, and it was so short. but wrestling-wise, the dude is on point consistently since the day that he stepped foot into the WWE, and even before that when he had hair. He's just fucking
godly, and everything he does looks like, it's one thing to be strong and just kind of go through the motions, because we as fans, we look at wrestling and we don't notice how difficult some of the things that these people do are. You don't get the reality that lifting up a dude on your shoulders like nothing is not like nothing. It's difficult. It's hard. And yes, the other person is helping and all that, but Cesaro and also Drew McIntyre to a degree, they do these feats of strength, and it's just like awe-inspiring. You're just like, holy shit. Once you realize how difficult that would be to a normal human being, you realize just how badass these people are, how badass Cesaro is. So watching him wrestle Rey just made all of those feats of strength even better. I thought the match was amazing. I think Cesaro is amazing. I really, really wish that they would give him an opportunity, and I kind of thought they were, but apparently, you know, not so much. With Rey winning, I wasn't upset. It makes sense. He's going into a high-profile match coming up. Cesaro is not. But because of the little suitcase toss that we got, which was random, actually, having Cesaro just kind of randomly show up, it was a little forced. But we got a good match out of it, and I don't know. I would love to see Cesaro more. With the comparison to Corbin, I mean, Corbin is still a rookie, I feel. Like, not in terms of length of time that he's been wrestling, but just in terms of quality of wrestling and character. I've said it before that I really truly believe it's easy to be a heel. And I've heard wrestlers say that before, and I've actually talked to people on the indie scene that say, like, yeah, being a heel is easy as shit. It doesn't take a lot to get people to hate you. But this Corbin is not even, he's not even good at that, because we don't hate him. We just annoyed. I mean, look how much he was on TV today. What for? You know? So I can't really compare him, nor do I want to compare him to any other big guy. Cesaro's been doing this for years, damn near 20 years maybe? Corbin, not so much, and it shows. And it shows in the littlest of things, like when Corbin stands up and is waiting for a crossbody, he's literally standing there waiting for a crossbody, whereas Cesaro, every motion is fluid, and although they know what's going on, it's like a dance, only Corbin is counting his steps, Cesaro just fucking dances.
Andrew, your thoughts on both the backstage segment as well as the match that it set up?
I mean, the backstage segment was just funny because it made it sound like Cesaro listens to our show by saying that, you know, Dominic looks more like Joe than he does like Ray. So that popped me a little bit. But I agree with everything Tony said. Cesaro was fantastic. Back when he was Claudio Castagnoli, all that other stuff. Great. We saw him against Cedric Alexander. Very good. This match, for some reason, honestly, I don't really have much decent recollection of it. It just kind of blended in with me. Like, it didn't strike me as anything, you know, like spectacular. It was fine. And the, you know, the Swiss 1-9 getting all tangled up and looking bad, that didn't necessarily help, especially with the way commentary tried to build that up. And then it just kind of, didn't help the match. But, like, I know how good Cesaro is. I know how good he's been in WWE and elsewhere. This match didn't strike me as strongly as it did you guys. It was there. It wasn't egregious, and it was fine. And the right person went over because Rey's got a match and Cesaro doesn't, which that's a travesty within itself.
Let me ask you guys one more quick question about this. Either way that the U.S. title match goes on Sunday, how would you feel about Cesaro being the next challenger for either Joe or Rey Mysterio?
Who's going to complain about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. I want him in, like, the main event. Like, I think that he could do it. I think that they could do it.
Yeah, but I think something like the U.S. would be fine since he's just coming out of a long tag team run with Sheamus and still reestablishing himself as a singles competitor to the WWE universe. I think U.S. title picture would be perfectly fine because it's not like we think less of Joe or Rey Mysterio.
That's kind of where I was going with it, Andrew, in the fact that while we may want Cesaro in the main event, I think you're going to have to do something in order to build up his opinion in the eyes of the casual fan before you can put him there. And something like an extended U.S. title run, a series of hard-hitting matches with a guy like Samoa Joe, or a series of athletic displays like he had with Rey Mysterio tonight, could be that exact kind of thing to elevate Cesaro into the next level on the Monday Night Raw roster.
Yeah, and we've seen he can work with anybody except really Enzo, and Enzo's not a part of the company anymore, so that's okay.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Going back just a little bit, we saw a replay of the video that aired for Roman Reigns on SmackDown, which they sugar the absolute crap out of. Audio was sweetened at several points there, much the same way it was touched up tonight during the course of the show as well. Andrew?
Yeah, we
were. Firefly Funhouse.
Yeah, what about it, buddy?
Go. Take it away.
Why do I have to go? How about you go for a change? Because it took you a while to get on board. And you know I've been singing the praises of this thing since Jump Street. So how did you feel about the big twist that came today, Harry?
I feel like I kind of want him to give Jack Nicholson his face paint back from the Batman movie.
Is that really your only takeaway?
No, I mean, I get the creepiness behind it. I get the fact, like, the darker room and it's inside of his head and stuff. I understand the symbolism here. That's not the problem. The problem is I expected a bigger payoff than just Bray in a weirdo, creepy lucha mask. Does that make sense?
Like, what would have been a bigger payoff, especially with the fact that we've been seeing a simplified variation of kind of going crazy with a hurt and a heel, his gloves and painting pictures and puppets. This is completely within that wheelhouse of basically just playing dress up and letting the demon character or whatever kind of pop out and, you know, show himself in the funhouse. And we also saw that Rambling Rabbit's alive with a giant scar down his face or whatever the fuck that was. So I guess he got put back together. So anything can happen in the Firefly Funhouse. You can be forgiven and apparently reincarnated or stitched back together or whatever that was. So
he took a trip to House Hardy.
Hey, either that, or he watched the Ted movies and we just didn't get Rambling Rabbit there to go, I'm okay, but I think you put the topping in the wrong spot, so I came out a little retarded. Eh?
Okay, you popped me with that. I appreciate a good Ted reference. Tony, what did you think of the Firefly Funhouse?
I'm hyped. Everything makes sense, and it's because someone took their time with this and made a plan. This was not one thing that just, like, was booked on the fly. This probably was filmed over the course of, like, a couple of days, but there was a plan. There was a fully laid-out plan. This was always going to happen, and you could tell because it feels so awesome. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I really liked what we're getting. And yeah, I got asked that same question. Like, what did you expect the payoff to be? You know, you have to understand, not you, Harry, but people that won't like this. Eventually, Bray Wyatt's going to have to wrestle. Is he going to come out in a sweater vest? You know what I mean? And the whole idea behind this is that he's found a way to work out his inner demons by putting them somewhere else. So he created a fucking second identity. I like it. I think that it's cool. I think that it is not a complete recreation of who he is. It's an evolution. And, you know, how many times do we get that with wrestlers? I'm cool with it. I really enjoyed it. I don't think I have anything bad to say about it. I don't know what I'm looking for.
I will go back to one of the things that I said while we were building up to this year, in that I feel like it's going to be almost Waylon Mercy-esque, where he's going to start off as one kind of guy when he's having his matches, and then eventually that switch is going to snap, and he'll devolve into the character that we saw tonight.
as long as it doesn't get campy where he, like, goes under the ring and puts on the demon mask and the gloves or whatever and pops back out as a different character, I think that's okay if it's just a...
See, that's my concern.
Switch
as well,
kind of imagery-wise.
Like, that's my concern as well because I feel like that's the LCD booking of it. Tony, thoughts? Yes. Anything to add?
I mean, I don't think he's going to go under the ring and pop out like that. I would have that fear, though, because look who we're talking about. Not Bray Wyatt, but the WWE. I'm hoping that they trust him with his character and that I'm hoping that he has a specific plan, not just in his character, but who he faces. You know, who's his foil? Who's the good or the bad person that's going to, you know, get him in the ring?
The immediate name to come to mind for that to me would be Cedric Alexander. Because Cedric's somebody that, while new to Raw, could be sacrificed for the new Wyatt character because he has a little bit of built up. What's the word I'm looking for here?
Credibility.
Credibility. He has something that you can cash in with the universe, with the WWE universe. There's a certain part of the fan base that actually is attracted to Cedric for his performances in the ring that you could kind of almost sacrifice him to the new Bray Wyatt. Or at the very least, have him start as Bray's first victim and then work it out so as they get to the point of feuding with each other.
I mean, honestly, I think his first victim's probably going to be Jinder because Jinder's going to try to get him to center himself and calm his demons even further or something like that, and Bray's just going to eat him. And I like this also from the possible dichotomy of Finn because Bray never got his Finn payoff match. Like, you know, Pumpkin Spice Demon versus Bray never happened because that was the MRSA outbreak and then all the other shit that happened. And then we just lost Bray, more or less, and that feud just kind of fizzled. So the fact that he acknowledged it by calling it, you know, controlling his demons, and he called it demon, that should, to me, at least, be a giant telegraph that it's going to be a demon versus demon fight at some point. Now, is it going to be in the ring? Or are we going to get another, you know, horror, whatever the fuck that was called, the stupid House of Horrors or shit like that, but now it's going to be a fire. Yeah, now it's going to be a Firefly Funhouse match. So it's going to be Demon Finn and Demon Bray, and then you're going to have the fucking random characters and children show up or some shit like that. That could be funny. That could be entertaining. I wouldn't hate that. But I think that's where the initial payoff is for this. Like, the first really, really big angle needs to be for Finn.
I'm going to officially put it out there, Firefly Fun House of Horrors.
It works.
And since we've already discussed the Seth Rollins promo and the main event, that brings us to the end of our conversation about the May 13th edition of Monday Night Raw. Let's get into a final reaction here real quick, and then we'll do our predictions for Money in the Bank this Sunday. Tony, favorite match or moment?
I want to give it to Cesaro and Rey, just by comparison of everything else. Raw was an obvious, you know, upgrade from last week, but it would have been impossible to be worse, I think. Although I don't want to put that into the universe. So,
I'll give it to
Rey versus Cesaro.
I think I know where this is going, but I have to ask anyway. Andrew?
See, you think I'm going to say Firefly Funhouse, but I'm not. I'm going to say the main event. Because for the very first time in a long time, did a storyline match actually have logical pieces moving within it. Like, Corbin and McIntyre have a built-up dislike of Braun. They weren't really working with Sammy, as we saw at the end when they did the ultimate heel thing and threw the other guy out to the hounds, basically, and just like, yeah, Braun, kill him too. And it's just like, it was so beautifully orchestrated. Like, yes, granted, it wasn't a wonderful wrestling match. It was a fucking no DQ match. You're not going to get a 5-star fucking wrestling match. But everything they did, from how Sammy acted to the fact that Baron came out, Drew came out, they literally, like, grabbed him and put him on top of him or yelled at him, cover him, or then they all dogpiled on Braun at some point. There was so much good stuff there just from character work and the fact that, hell, even commentary didn't fuck it up. And they said, Drew and Baron have had their issues, but, you know, my enemy's enemy is my, you know, friend kind of thing. So they squashed that just to beat the shit out of Braun and take him out because he was the biggest threat. Like, that was so well done and the most logical, like, storytelling they've had in a long fucking time.
A fair assessment of that. I'm going to agree with Tony here and go with Cesaro and Rey. I enjoyed the way that they booked the main event, but I think Cesaro and Rey told a better story throughout the course of their match, and I tend to focus more on the match itself rather than the story at hand. So I enjoyed the action of Cesaro and Rey more than I enjoyed the storytelling between Braun and Sammy.
Did we talk about the main event?
We did.
I mean, we were going to give it a point to, just none of us actually decided to talk about the match.
Yeah.
Did you have thoughts that you wanted to share, Tony?
Yeah, if you have anything you want to chime in with, feel free.
Way too many plastic trash cans.
I mean, I thought that brought the dumpster thing full circle and the whole garbage thing, you know.
Yeah, well, the dumpster thing was stupid.
I do miss aluminum trash cans. They make a good noise.
But did you have any problems with the match itself, Tony, before we move on with the final reaction stuff?
No, it made sense. And, I mean, you know, commentary pounding it over the head with a, you know, with that fact, other than that, it worked. Like, of course they don't want Braun in. Of course they want Sammy in. And as much as I hate Corbin, seeing him throw Sammy back out to Braun just kind of made perfect sense. It was a great exclamation point. You know, like,
and
just,
yes,
whoosh. You're like, don't
that
think
put
we're
it over the
full,
top for
like,
me, too.
Hey, Braun, here you go. Kill him.
Exactly.
Tony, Greg Watry.
Shit, I had it. I'm going to go with probably... I want to say the opening segment, but that's kind of a cop-out. I'll go with the Raleigh versus Apollo Crews. Just Mojo Raleigh, just sorry, buddy, but it's not going to happen.
Yet again, I'm with Tony here. I took Mojo and Apollo Crews as well. Andrew?
I'm a little surprised Tony didn't give it to just Charlotte trying to speak, because that whole signing thing was just painful. And I think that was, I can't say that Mojo and Apollo was Greg Watry, because there was nothing to it to even call it stupid. Like, none of them have any built momentum or story. It was shoehorned and happened. Like, it wasn't bad. It wasn't good. There was just there. So I can't give it to that. So I have to give it to that shitty fucking contract signing where Becky said nothing. Lacey played her character well, and then Charlotte just butchered the whole fucking thing every time she opened her mouth. So,
are you specifically discrediting anybody before I mark this down, then? Because I heard you give credit
specifically
to Lacey.
Specifically Charlotte, but the segment itself, I guess, is something I have to throw on there because it all fed into itself.
All right, so basically what I'm asking is for the year-end standings here. Do I give a third of a point to all three ladies, or do I give Charlotte a full point?
Give Charlotte the full point.
Okay. You mentioned during the course of that there about the Apollo Crews and Mojo Raleigh match that it wasn't good, it wasn't bad, it was just there. And I think that kind of brings up a problem here, is that a lot of people feel like the opposite of love is hate. It's not. The opposite of love is indifference when it comes to certain things. If I'm upset about something, at least I have something to talk about. If I'm indifferent towards it, then I don't fucking care.
That's more the difference of being over and not over.
That's pretty accurate, I would say, as far as this whole situation goes here. Just we don't care enough about Mojo or Apollo right now to have any kind of investment in their match there. And I think that was the problem that Tony and I had. It was just there for the sake of being there. At least the contract signing kind of served a purpose of making it look like Becky's at a serious disadvantage going into Sunday.
Which is fine, but granted the fact that I don't know Watry as well as you do, it always seemed like it had to be like a completely moronic thing or something that was done that just completely tanked the whole fucking quality of the segment. And
yeah, Andrew,
indifference
you're actually
doesn't tank.
Yeah, that's true. Oh,
okay.
That's kind of what we were going with.
Do yourself
like
a favor and
things,
don't ever find out.
And then there's bad things, and then there's like, what the fuck?
See, and that's kind of always how I took it. And indifference isn't a what-the-fuck moment to me. It's just kind of like, all right, it happened. Move on.
The fuck did it actually happening on a taped show? They just gave them out there to die because of the dead crowd.
Okay, I changed my mind to Charlotte.
Go ahead.
Tony. Wow, I'm going to take that as a special moment, so I'm just going to hang up now.
I will officially move you over to Charlotte, Tony, but I'm sticking with Mojo and Apollo just because I had that why the fuck is this happening reaction to it.
Hasn't Apollo flipped and hurt his knee already, like, numerous times in his matches?
Yes.
It's just
one of which was against Mojo, too.
Oh, wow.
I mean, the same thing happens to Charlotte, too, because that's how she lost against, Carmella the second time? She did a moonsault and jammed her knee or some shit like that. So it's an overused trope in WWE. That's what we can say, I guess.
TVtropes.com, everybody. Make sure you guys check out that site. It's pretty entertaining. All right. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
I would say a 6 out of 10. This was obviously way better than last week. But it was just kind of there. And I think what upsets me, what disappoints me the most is that I don't really see signs of a significant change, nor do I see signs of a gradual change. I think that they're just too stuck in their ways, and it's coming off as just like, damn, this is what we're stuck with, you know? Like, it sucks, because I just feel like there's so much better that we could be having. But, you know, you still see little glimpses of it, you know? So I guess we're here for the long haul. Besides, we got this podcast to do.
One of these days, Tony's going to tell us to fuck off. I know it's going to happen. The question is when. Andrew, scale of 1 to 10.
Well, you know how my wonderful math and biases come into play since we've established that gimmick. And there was no
house party tonight.
So I can't even be mad. And I was going to probably give this show about like a 6, but there was no Lucha House Party. And, we know my bias for Firefly Funhouse, and that was really fucking good. So I have to give the point up to the show. So what normally would be a 6, thanks to Firefly Funhouse, and I did really enjoy the main event, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
I'm the lowest of the three of us at a 5.5.
Who are you and what did you do with Harry?
I think my problem is the fact that the crowd just seems like they didn't give a shit for most of the show, and that could be the way that they edited the sound and stuff, but the lack of reaction for a good portion of the show just kind of took me out. You would think that they would be
more
active.
They have weird humor, and they have one song. They have one song they change the words to. It's like the fucking Seven Nation Army song or something like that from White Stripes. Like, la, 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 la. All we've got is this one song. That's all they fucking do. And it's like, come on, they're British.
The views and opinions of Andrew Balazs do not necessarily reflect the rest of us here at the Chair Shot Radio Network.
Bollocks.
Yeah, but they kind of do.
Damn it, Tony. Okay, MVP, Tony.
Bray Wyatt.
Andrew.
Bray Wyatt.
Cesaro. despite the fact that he still can't cut a promo to save his life. You guys ready to make some predictions for Money in the Bank?
Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andrew.
Appreciate it. Let's predict some shit, man.
All right, let's start at the bottom and work our way up. So this is going to be the probable
like
pre-show match. Yeah, fuck that guy, too.
No, thanks.
I'm waiting for the Raptors to choke. I mean, they kind of have to since he's a fan, right?
Fuck, I don't,
anyway.
I don't know.
I mean, he flip-flops depending on whoever's winning because he was a Cavaliers fan at one point, then he's a Raptors fan. He's just from Toronto or some shit, but he's such a fair-weather fan, it's not funny.
He was much more entertaining when he was in a wheelchair.
The views and opinions of Harry Broadhurst.
Cruiserweight title match. Tony Nese defending the belt against Aria Davari. Tony?
Who?
What? Oh, shit.
You know that chick that stabbed the Night King in Game of Thrones? She wants the Cruiserweight title now. She's under 205.
Oh, she fucking wins. Who's the champion?
Nice.
Tony's the champion, and don't make me generic somebody up in
that.
This bitch.
He won that recently. Tony Nese is going to win because he has abs.
Andrew?
Yes, Tony Nese is going to win because Arya can't bring weapons because it's not a no DQ match.
Nese wins because there's better challenges waiting in the wings than Arya fucking Davari.
He's trying to give a serious answer. Come on, it's the Cruiserweights. No one takes them seriously.
I try. God damn it, I try. Roman Reigns and Elias. Tony?
I want to say Elias. I think he might need that a little more. But, you know, Roman Reigns is Roman Reigns, so Roman Reigns.
Andrew?
I'm actually going to go with Elias because I think there's enough shenanigans that can happen. And given the fact that, I think Shane and Miz is in a steel cage or something like that, I think.
It is.
Yeah, so there's less chance of shenanigans for that one. So if one had to go screwy, I think Elias is going to get a win by hook or by crook.
See, you say that until Elias slams a cage door on Miz's face later on in the show. Who I want to win this match and who I think are going to win this match are two very different answers. I want Elias to win because eventually you have to give Elias something to work with, right? 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 It's not going to happen here. Roman wins. The cage match is next. Miz and Shane McMahon. Tony?
The Miz. Yeah. I don't know. I thought this shit was over. It's a storyline that's been going on for a minute. It has legs. It's not all that bad. But I would like to see The Miz wrestle a wrestler. So,
Andrew.
Well, I too think The Miz is going to win only because it would make sense to have it one-on-one. And then maybe the rubber match is at the Jam in the Sand or whatever the fuck we're calling it now. So that would be interesting.
It would make sense for them to go back there for the rubber match.
So, yeah, with the whole best in the world thing, like that just, it logically makes sense to me. So even if Elias does slam a cage door on Miz, there's nothing stopping Roman from getting involved and Superman punching Shane or shaking the cage to knock Shane off of it when he's trying to climb out that way or something like that. Like, there's enough shenanigans that I think Miz could still pull off the win, and then we get a rubber match at Sands of whatever fuck it is.
Sands of Time.
Sure.
I know you don't care, but I figured I'd answer. The last cage match we had in the WWE was Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens at Extreme Rules in 2018, excuse me, when Braun threw Kevin off the top of the cage to the announce table. Do we see either of these two guys take a bump anywhere similar to that in this match? Tony?
Was that Esther?
Do I what? Do I see what?
The last cage match on pay-per-view in the WWE was Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens at Extreme Rules 2018. That match saw Strowman throw Owens off the top of the cage through the announce table. Do we see a similar off of the top of the cage bump in this match?
Well, yeah, but I don't think they remember that match. It's just because it's Shane. Someone's going to fly off of something.
Andrew?
That plays into my whole Roman Reigns interference. Either he shakes the cage or maybe Roman climbs the cage and Superman punches Shane off of it and then he dies. I don't fucking know. But Shane's got to fall off of something one way or the other, and it's going to be a steady kind of moment.
See, I don't think you can do that here, because if in order for Shane to come off the top of the cage, Shane would have to win the match, and since all three of us are picking Miz to win...
Well, not if Roman climbs the cage to stop him, punches him, he falls back in. And then say he had to fall out.
SmackDown Women's
Falling
title
works
on
both
the line.
Ways, Buzz Lightyear. Come on.
SmackDown Women's title on the line when Becky Lynch takes on Charlotte Flair. Tony?
I hope Becky wins both matches. And I'm going to predict that she does too.
Andrew.
This is the one where it's probably the most. Yeah, Charlotte's the one that has the most likeliness of winning because it's Charlotte. But then I think with everybody, including the writers, even acknowledging the fact that people are sick of seeing Charlotte always think that she's the next challenger entitled to a title shot. I'd like to see Becky keep it here and then lose it to Lacey. So, assuming that it starts with SmackDown and ends with Raw, I think there's a good chance she retains against Charlotte and loses to Lacey. Because then the argument can be made that Lacey didn't beat a full strength Becky and blah, blah, blah. It's a slightly tainted title win for a up-and-coming wrestler. So, yeah, I can see the story playing out there. So, I think Becky will win both, but I'm going to say Lacey wins hers.
I'm going to say Becky retains the Raw title but loses the SmackDown title to Charlotte.
Boo.
I agree, boo, but it ties into my Money in the Bank prediction.
Time.
U.S. title match sees Samoa Joe defend against Rey Mysterio. Tony? Did we lose Tony?
Tony, did you die? Did you mute yourself? Oh, no, Tony!
But did you die?
I'm back. I had to sneeze 100 times.
But did you die, though?
Nah. Don't worry, Chang. No, I didn't. I didn't die. And Joe's going to win. Joe's going to kill Ray, and it's going to be great.
Andrew.
Ray better get murdered, so Joe better retain.
Is it weird that I see Joe winning when Dominic turns?
God, I hope not. That's unnecessary.
I'm not saying it is, but that's what I'm foreseeing happening here. Just one of those what the fuck, why not sake situations.
Samoa Joe is my new father. No.
Dominic comes out bumping Joe's theme song. Dun 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 dun. I'm telling you, it's money. All right. Bro. Women's Money in the Bank, Tony.
Oh, fuck. Shit, let me pull up the cards, because I don't...
Here, I'll announce
know.
The participant. I will announce the participants. Give me 2 seconds. All right, here
well,
we
know
ready?
Who's in it from Raw.
Natalya, Dana Brooke, Naomi, Alexa Bliss, Mandy Rose, Bayley, Ember Moon, Carmella. Take it away, Tony.
Alexa Bliss.
Tying Carmella for most Money in the Bank ladder match wins at 2. Andrew?
We're gonna give it to Naomi. Mm-hmm.
Bayley, who beats the absolute fuck out of Charlotte on SmackDown after the pay-per-view and takes the title.
Just to stick it to Sasha.
Yes,
you'd like
for
to
that
stick
very
it to
reason,
Sasha.
Too.
I would. Oh, my God, I would.
Damn it, I wasn't ready for that. Damn it.
Take the fish.
He wasn't ready. Oh.
No. Men's Money in the Bank, Tony.
Well, you know.
Do you need the participants again?
Let's see. There's a bald-headed Corbin. An Orton.
Bald-headed Ricochet.
And Ricochet.
And slightly haired
Sammy.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton, Ali, Andrade, and Finn Balor.
Okay, so this one. This is interesting because every year I say the same thing about Money in the Bank, and every year they give it to someone who doesn't need it. So Drew McIntyre, I think, is going to win the belt, or the belt, the briefcase, but he doesn't need it. Like, this dude could fucking claymore his way into a main event title match and nobody would care. I would love for Andrade to get it because I think that he's capable. And every match that this guy has had is pretty close to amazing. So my guess is going to be Drew. My prediction will be Drew. My internal yearning will be for Andrade.
I will go ahead of Andrew here just because I am actually picking Andrade to win the briefcase. Andrew?
Yeah, see, this is no fun because I kind of agree that it should be Andrade, and I'm torn. I'm torn with my love of Andrade and my love of Randy Orton because Orton doesn't need it, and. Orton doesn't need it, but it would be a nice feather in the cap for Kofi if Kofi retained over Orton's cash-in. And that would bring things full circle nicely aside from just a multi-person match and a couple gauntlet bullshit thingies. So,
I really
want to say Andrade. What? Go.
Real quick. Are you going to go with Andrade officially? All right, well, while you ponder that, I just want to point out, too, that if Andrade doesn't win, I wouldn't be surprised to see Sami Zayn walk out of Money in the Bank with the briefcase.
It's plausible. I don't see it, but it's plausible. But I'm going to go with Orton just to be different because, fuck, I want to say Andrade, but I'm going to go with Orton. My pick could change on the official one for Chair Shot by that point. I don't know.
The WWE Championship is on the line when Kofi Kingston defends against Kevin Owens. Tony?
Kofi Kingston is going to win.
Andrew?
Kofi needs to stand up for the rest of his New Day brethren. So, yeah, I don't see how he loses that when the logical point is for the face to win here.
See, you're confusing logic in the WWE, and that just doesn't make sense.
But they've done that the last few times, WrestleMania.
Kofi's had a nice run. But let's be honest. Ryan wasn't wrong. Kofi is the WWE champion doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. The belt's coming back to Kevin Owens here. I like the moment that Kofi got, but that moment has passed. He got a 1 month run out of it, a little over a month actually, because it was like 6 weeks from WrestleMania to Money in the Bank. But I don't think that they actually view Kofi as a credible draw, whereas Kevin Owens is a known commodity for the company. Universal title is on the line when Seth Rollins defends against AJ Styles. Tony.
Seth is going to have the belt for a while. I think that this is another in a long line of defenses of good contenders that they'll try to bring, you know, or Seth will try to bring prestige back to the title. So it'll be a really good match, but Seth will walk away with the belt. And AJ probably, like, goes heel afterwards or some shit.
Andrew.
Yeah, that's probably what it is Seth retains, AJ turns, and then they run it back in a week, in a pay-per-view or two, something like that. I don't know. But I don't see AJ winning this at all.
I don't see AJ winning, but I don't see Seth winning either. I'm calling no contest due to a double pinfall in order to set up the rematch for Santa Time. And then I think there is where AJ... Well, AJ doesn't go to Saudi Arabia, though. He told him last year he wouldn't.
Well, unless he changes
his tune. No, AJ did go to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan didn't.
Daniel Bryan didn't. That's right. So, yeah. They do the rematch at in Saudi Arabia, and AJ takes the title there, turning heel in the process. Possibly with help from a couple of good brothers. He kind of teased it earlier. They are on Raw again, too, so. I mean, assuming Creative hasn't forgotten that they're still on the roster. They might have.
No, we saw them during the Usy Hut segment last week for like 12 seconds.
How dare you bring up Usy Hut again?
You brought up the Good Brothers first. That was technical the last time we've seen them.
Settles that. You're back hot again. I just figured it would make sense given how petty I could be on the show at times.
Oh, yeah, it was good. I liked it.
For those wondering, I muted him as soon as he brought up Usy Hot. All right, so, Tony, I understand speaking is back. Tell everybody about it.
Oh, yeah, we're filming our first episode of, I don't know, our second season, if you will. This is going to be a completely revamped version of a podcast that I had previously. I'm taking basically full creative control over, and I think the changes are very, very prevalent with the trailer that we released last week. It's going to be a more tightened up show, shorter, more succinct and to the point, on topic. I'm not going to be... having one person overshadow any other two. And, you know, that goes for me. That goes for my co-star. I'm not pointing out any one person specifically. It's going to be more conversational, but also a little bit more structured. Pretty excited about it. Pretty pumped. So be on the lookout for that. You can add us on Twitter. Speakeasy Squad on Facebook, basically the same shit. On Instagram, we're on all of that shit. And I fully plan on this thing getting a lot more traction than it did previously.
In addition, if you want to check out the trailer that Tony just mentioned or read Tony's actual physical review of tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, where can they find that at, Tony?
On YouTube, you can type in Speakeasy Podcast, the letter E, the letter Z, and view the trailer. We also have some past episodes there if you so choose to watch them, but they are going to be a little bit different than what I plan on filming over the next few weeks. So, yeah, I thought it was fun. The trailer actually was written by me. I had a friend help me because she was hot, so, you know, it's nice having hot friends. I thought it was funny, really, you know, a minute. 20 seconds, I believe. It was a good time.
Okay, let's tee this softball up once again. To read Tony's physical review of tonight's show, tonight's episode of Raw. In addition to check out the podcast trailer as well, where can people find that at, Tony?
Oh, my bad. 411mania.com. It's one of the...
Thank you. Andrew, Wrestle Circus is back, huh?
It is. Meh.
Yeah, the show seems kind of meh to me. I mean, I like who the champion is now, but the show does seem kind of meh coming out of that there. If people would be interested in reading your Wrestle Circus review or for your thoughts coming up soon on Double or Nothing, where could people find that at?
Oh, you could find that on thechairshot.com. Yeah.
We are a presentation here of the Chairshot Radio Network. In addition, hopefully soon-ish, I would think, the homecoming review for Impact Wrestling that I've been promising for a while is done, is completed, it's in the queue, just needs a couple of bells and whistles added, the picture, the proper formatting for the website there. Andrew or Greg will be taking care of that. That'll be coming to you over on thechairshot.com as well. So for the Line in the Sand, Andrew Balazs, and the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to this May 13th edition of the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Tony, we're done here.
Hey, y'all. Deuces, bitches.
See, normally I let you guys listen to Pinwheel because I personally love that song, but unfortunately I have a very early appointment tomorrow. I have to head out to help my stepdad with some grocery shopping. So thank you for listening. We'll talk to you guys next Monday. Andrew and I will be here for your listening pleasure, and I'll make sure we get you Tony's review for Raw and Money in the Bank so you can have that for your own personal records as well if you wanted to. Hey, why not? Who am I to judge? Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next Monday night here on the Raw Reaction on the Chairshot Radio Network.